This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
There is a new behavior in condo life that will drive both of you crazy. And you'll never see it because you don't live in condos, but there's the door opening, and instead of saying, you know, sorry, but there's two people in here, or like maybe just catch the net, they're saying, no, not in this one. And it's just like, whoa. They're like the elevator police. They're just like, no way, not this one, two people. And the way they're saying it, it's just
so rude.
Oh, yeah. Dude, it's like sickening. Like when I'm in there, I'm just like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I got a mask on. If you got a mask on, I kind of don't care, but there's rules. I just try not to be rude. These people are just like, nope, don't even think about it. Don't come in here. There's two people. No way. And it's the most annoying thing you'll ever see in your life.
Yeah. People have right now, the frustration, I don't blame them, but people have lost that ability to, you know, I think they're so consumed with their own lives. And
it's,
I mean,
tough.
When's the last time you've been out in public and just interacting
there.
With, you know, when's the last time you've actually just interacted with a stranger? You haven't because we've all been in our bubble. So I think we're all on guard. We're all very prickly. And,
it's beyond prickly. It's elevator police. And I understand it. People are having a rough go out there and they've had enough of everything.
I guess those are the rules though, right? I mean, that would be different. Living in a condo in a big building where you got thousands of people and there's two or three elevators and...
Dude,
you're up on
I get
the
it, but you don't have
floor.
To be a drill sergeant. You
no,
don't
exactly.
Have to, you don't have to give me the old, no, not this one, no way.
Yeah.
Two people already.
Right.
It's like, okay, go ahead.
So do you have to wait? I guess you got to sit there and wait for it to go all the way up and come all the way back down. And if there's a service elevator,
dude, I don't care about
that.
It's not that big a deal. But you don't have to be a you know what.
Yeah, the frustrating thing for me is you go to the grocery store and you see somebody who doesn't, they're wearing a mask, but they don't really want to wear it. So their big, disgusting nose is hanging out of it. So they don't cover their nose. They just cover their mouth. So what the hell is the use of that? You know what I mean?
The worst was yesterday. It happened to me. I got the old, no, you're not coming in this one. Next one, there's two people. So I waited and I didn't wait long enough. And under my breath, I gave some... some colorful language that you would usually hear from me. And I hit the elevator too soon, and the door opened again. And I was just... I had to do the horse eye the other way and act like I was looking at something down the hall.
Yeah, you're distracted all of a sudden. Something's going on. Stage left. I better go check that out. Mm-hmm. That's tough, man. That's a different lifestyle, for sure, that you're dealing with. And well, hopefully we get through it sooner rather than later. And everyone is polite again, and everyone's in a good spirit because we're all grinding through this together. Ray will join us here in just a moment. The Leafs have some lineup changes tonight. Michael Hutchinson will play in net. Shouldn't be surprising. I mean, I think we figured that was going to happen. But Zach Hyman, I guess, got banged up last night. He's day-to-day. He's out. So Patan will draw in for him, and Mikko Lehtinen will play for Zach Bogosian tonight.
Wow.
Which I don't get the impression is injury related. I guess it's just we want to give him the night off. He's a grizzled vet. He's been playing a lot. It's a back-to-back, and maybe you want to get Lehtinen in there, I guess, and not have him just sitting around. Maybe it's based on who they're playing. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
But
I was worried about Hyman. He took that slap shot on the foot last night. That's, to me, would be, I'm hoping it's just a bruised foot or something. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not evaluating it. I'm just saying that I don't know if you guys saw that. He took that shot and was hobbling around. He stayed on the rest of the shift and grinded, but you could tell he was uncomfortable. So you know what it's like. You guys have your skate in your boot, or sorry, your foot in your skate in your boot, and when you take it out at the end of the game, it blows up, or you get an x-ray and maybe there's something in there going on, but you hope that it's all right and just misses a game, because that's a guy who's played well and very consistent for them in your top six.
Yeah, he's been great. He's been great for them. And hopefully it is day-to-day. I mean, we know injuries, especially with COVID and stuff, and I don't know what the rules are with getting physio and getting in and seeing doctors and all that kind of stuff. I get the impression like you have access to it, but I don't know if you can rehab in the same way. Like the Raptors just went through it with OG Anunoby, where he was day-to-day for 10 games. Like every game would pop up, and you're like, I think he's playing tonight. They've been saying he should be ready. Nope, going to miss it. Maybe tomorrow. Nope, going to miss it. Maybe Saturday. Nope, going to miss it. And I wonder how much of that is just the nature of the injury, which can happen if you have a lingering injury and it can flare up and it's unpredictable, and how much of it is I can't rehab the way I want to.
Right.
I don't know what the protocols are with
Might be a little bit of both, but you're right. Like, nowadays, you're hiding so much. Like, it's just he's unavailable to play or a little nicked up. Like, he could have something going on, and you're right. He could be day-to-day for 10 games. You hope that's not the case, and it's just a bruise or whatever's wrong with him. But, you know, I immediately thought in seeing that shot, I was like, that one stung.
That one hurt. That one stung.
That was a hard shot.
I was surprised he kept playing. Like, even because they got the puck out, then got it deep, and he chased it on a forecheck. I'm like, get off the ice, man. He just took a bomb off the leg.
I know.
But anyway, so Hyman is out tonight, and Bogosian is out tonight. Michael Hutchinson will start. Ray Ferraro will join us here in just a moment. We'll get his take on what Joe Thornton said about Matthews last night, where that's his guy. You know, it's his line mate, his buddy, and he's saying, you know, I play with two or three guys who can do this, but maybe not at this level.
Didn't it feel like he was doing his San Jose tour through Toronto, but he's actually on the Leafs?
I like it.
Yeah, it did.
You know, we've talked about that someone is going to have to start advocating. In the weirdest reality of Toronto is it's the biggest hockey market. It's got the most media. Yet, out of spite, in a way, you can't prop up the players that much. Now, there haven't been guys that have deserved it.
I was just going to say, who's deserved it? Like,
for sure.
There was a couple super fans that voted for Kadri to be up for the Selke the other day, or a couple years ago.
Yeah, and obviously that's just silliness. But
this is more legit. Like,
this is,
you know,
100%
this is more of a
legit
conversation. Like, but I will say, you have to include the league.
Of course,
like,
you do.
You
of
know,
course.
That, like, you
but
know,
he is included in what,
you're right,
like,
but
he's been knocking on this door for a while. This isn't just, wow, a shock. I can't believe he's doing this. It's amazing.
Right.
You know, he's been knocking on the door for a while.
Right.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. Where do you stand on the Matthews Hart Trophy pursuit?
Oh, well, he's one of the premier elite candidates for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know how there could be an argument to that. Is there?
There shouldn't be.
No, I mean, like, he's a legit one. There's five or six guys, I think, probably right now that are, you know, and I'll forget some of them, but I'm sure that have to be in that conversation. Of course, the two guys in Edmonton are, in Draisaitl and McDavid. I would think Jonathan Huberdeau should be in Florida. He's had an amazing start to the year. Patrick Kane's probably another one.
Yeah.
I mean... It looks right now like Kane's going to be 40 years old and still throwing up 70 points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just never slows down. I don't know that there's some years there's a defenseman that kind of, even though there's the Norris Trophy, there's a defenseman that sticks his nose into this, but I don't know that there is really, not this year anyway. But those would be like kind of my five guys, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah. We went down our list and Scheifele came up, Marchand, Bergeron's been off to a great start. But, yeah, those are all – it's all a cast of characters that I think everyone would accept.
Yeah.
And, for you know, it depends on which way you look at it and whether or not you're looking for fresh blood. Do you believe that the crown is held by somebody? Narratives play a role in this in terms of predicting who's going to win. We saw that in the NFL. We had that discussion, you know, Mahomes – versus Rodgers and the narrative that could come into play. And sometimes voters are just looking for something new, and Matthews would check off a lot of those boxes.
But I think the something new argument is ridiculous.
It should
really
be, but
do.
I think it's a reality, right? I think it happens.
Well, yeah, okay, sure, it's a reality, but it's ridiculous. It's not like who's got the shiny new coat. It's like who's the most valuable player.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the Mahomes-Rodgers thing, if you're like, yeah, I should vote for Patrick Mahomes because it's new, well, what criteria does that have to anything? Like, that Matthews hasn't won this yet. Like, why should that matter? It should matter that he's the most valuable player, if that's what you believe. If, in that case, Bobby Orr should have never won the Norris Trophy 7 years in a row, except they kept voting for the best guy.
That's what it should be. And it, for whatever reason, it's fatigue, I think. I guess. I mean, when we're talking about the best of the best, where, and maybe it's not applied in the NHL. I don't know if it has over the past full, you know, 3 or 4 years. Where even though
I
would say
it does in a way, Brian, it doesn't, don't you think like there's a momentum to a guy? Like a couple years ago, I forget how many years ago, Sean Couturier won the Selke. And or I think he did anyway. And it was like there was a momentum to his candidacy.
Oh yeah, so they just get in there every year. It's like no matter what. Yeah,
you're right.
And you're like, oh, he's got to be in. Like this is his time. He's got to be in. And really, that shouldn't matter. Maybe it's more so with the Selke, because in a lot of cases you start to notice a guy year after year. But Patrice Bergeron can go out there in rubber boots, and he's going to be one of the finalists for the Selke.
Well,
every year.
You're right. And Brian, what you're talking about, maybe like the Shea Weber / Brent Burns / Doughty, you know, it's his turn type of thing. Roman Yossi's been the best D for a couple of years. Well, you know, the Lifetime of Achievement Award instead. Mm. I don't see that with the Hart, though. I see it with other trophies where you get momentum. The only momentum Hart that I've seen in recent years, correct me if I'm wrong, was Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall had such a ridiculous kind of stretch near the end of the year where he separated, you know, himself in points, and he ended up with, 90-some points, and the next guy was at 50. That one was, in recent memory, kind of like momentum build.
Yes, but it was shocking that his team made the playoffs, too. There was that element as well.
Right, right.
That Jersey was not very good, and wow, I can't believe they made it, and Taylor Hall has been so good. You're right, in terms of that momentum. Corey Perry hitting 50 goals, and that kind of developed into a momentum type of Hart trophy, I think.
Right.
But, you know, Matthews, I said this in the last segment, right? You know, the case for McDavid is pretty simple. He's the best player, and he's playing at his best. And if the team makes the playoffs, that's very difficult to beat. You know, it's a very compelling case. Best player, most points, playing at his best, team makes the playoffs. Okay, that checks a lot of boxes. I think for Matthews, for me, you know, he's got to keep up with them in points. He's not going to pass them. He's not going to match them. But he's got to keep up with them. I think he's clearly got to win the Rocket. And his case would be if he's the best player on a very good team / best team in the division, that goes a long way. And maybe what he would need looking into the future is what Draisaitl got last year. Remember when McDavid got injured and Draisaitl just continued to be a rock star? And it was like, all right, he's going to win the Hart. If Matthews gets off a line with Marner, based on injury or Marner moves around, and Matthews continues to score at the clip that he's at, I think that might solidify a case for him too.
You know, you mentioned the Rocket. Like I think there is value, and at least in my mind, and should be considered, is that, you know, points are one thing, and there's, you know, assists are super important, but to finish, to be the top goal scorer, and if it's by 4 or 5 or 6 or something like that, that matters to me. Like you can't underestimate how hard it is to score. Like it's bloody hard. And so I don't think that takes away from McDavid's candidacy, but I think that is critical to Matthews. Like he's got to score at that rate. And as his game continues to get better, like I think we've talked about this, you know, a couple of times, but he doesn't even look like the same player he looked like a couple years ago. And if he's on that trajectory, he's not going to win one, he'll win more than one. Mm-hmm. Because he's starting to, like, you know, he just leans on somebody in the defensive zone, takes the puck, and whoosh, out they go. And you know who's done that a lot? I watched last night, Noodles, I know you watched, we talked a little bit, but Draisaitl does that more and more.
Yeah,
they use their size in the D zone, and all of a sudden they got the puck again. That stuff is going to manifest itself into bigger numbers, because no matter what, the guy that wins the Hart, generally speaking, is a pretty good offensive player or a great offensive player.
Yeah,
Ray, what did you see last night? Anything kind of stick out with you? And what do you expect tonight with Hutchison going into the net?
Well, I think they have to play him. Like,
sure, yeah.
You know, eventually you're just going to run the wheels off Freddie here, and he's played well enough that there's no point in getting him to the net where he gets tired, gives up a couple of crappy ones, starts to question his confidence, and you spiral a little bit. Like, there's no need to do that. The Leafs are a better team than Ottawa, and with, even with Hutchinson in goal, and clearly he's not Freddie Anderson, they've got to be able to think they can win this game. Like, they have to be able to think that. As far as last night, I don't know, it seemed like a mid-season game that, even though it's not really mid-season, but that didn't have enough energy for anyone to separate themselves early. And then the longer Ottawa's in the game, now they're in the game and they get the goal, you know, the Tkachuk-Matthews goal there. And, you know, like, at that point, they're not going away. It's now it's the game. You know, that those ones I remember as just being like hard work. Like, there's just nothing easy in the game like that.
We mentioned yesterday that McDavid was on the verge of 500 points, and he got it last night. 500 points in 369 games, which is exactly what Sidney Crosby did. It was just an incredible coincidence, really, but a testament to how great these two players are. What's that?
Passed me at 496. Congrats.
Yeah, congratulations to 97.
Yeah, well, he's got 398 to go. We'll see how he turns out.
Yeah, I think he might have a shot at it.
He'll probably get it by next Thursday.
He very well could. Big one tonight and over the weekend. He's all good. But it does feel, you know, in this era of GOAT talk, separating Gretzky or Howe Lemieux is probably appropriate. And if you just apply it to this century, you know, fighting for the GOAT of the 21st century, it feels like it's going to be McDavid and Sid. Like, I think Ovechkin should be included, and he likely will be. But I think these two guys are on a different level. I think Sid has already played himself certainly into top 10 all time, maybe top 5 or 6, depending on how you want to list it. But you break down what Crosby has accomplished in terms of winning, and that's where I think it's going to be tough for McDavid, where, like, Crosby scored the golden goal in Vancouver. Like, that, I don't think that'll ever be available to McDavid. Mm-hmm. And he's got 3 cups. He's been to 4. He's got to get going, McDavid. Like, the points are one thing. You got to win, I think, if you're ever going to be able to say that you're passing Sidney Crosby.
I don't disagree. I just, you know, when you say, like, you got to get going, like, so what we're saying is the Oilers got to get going.
Exactly.
Like, what the hell else is he going to do? He can't play goal. He can't, no. You know, he can't right. play defense. He's, you know, you're one part of it. And the one thing that I think, when I think of Crosby, I just did a thing for SportsCenter on, you know, because he's coming up to his 1,000th game on the weekend, is that, like, there's a relentlessness, work ethic, will that I think separates Crosby from a lot of other great players. I think McDavid has it too. I think most of these great players have it. Like, you know, like the story we heard about this summer, they're down in Arizona, and Matthews and McDavid want to work on receiving the puck on their backhand because they want to improve that. And you're like, really? They got to improve that? I don't think so. But, like, the ability to break it down and then to put the work in, I think, separates these guys that have been given all this God-given talent, yet they manifest it by their work ethic, by their desire, their love for the work, to put the work in. And I think that's one of the ways that Sid will separate himself always. Because how many times have we seen footage of him? And maybe we never see the footage of the other guys, but he's the only guy out there. He's, you know, he's working late. He's, you know, his training stuff that we saw on video before other guys were putting it out there, and you're like, oh my God, the guy's a machine. And he's done all this on the back of, there was a time when, man, we didn't even know if he was going to play again.
Yeah.
Like, that's right. Not far-fetched. That, you know, that was a long time he was out after the Steckel hit. And that was, you know, and I mean, like, we didn't know. Like, was he going to come back? Was he going to be the same? And, man, he's, you know, he's had an incredible run.
Yeah. Here's the other thing I wanted to pile on to that, too, is, and I know people talk about it, but the eras are just slightly different. Like, Crosby started when, you know, there were still defensemen that were chopping wood in front of the net and can opener. Like, you know, McCabe was can opening guys. Like, you know, there was a lot of difficulty to what Sidney had to go through. And I'm not suggesting it's just a different game. That's my point. Yep. It's just a different game right now. You're not seeing guys get chopped down and slashed in the hands as much and having to go through all the physical nonsense that a guy like Crosby did. And he was actually a target early on. Remember, they called him a whiner, and he'd get punched in the face, and he'd be yelling at the ref. And, like, he had a lot of adversity to go through just to get to those points, to get to, you know, greatness. And that, you know, McDavid, not as much, put it that way, as far as the physicality.
The games are completely different, right? Like, you're right, Noodles. Like, the stuff that you had to fight through, or he had to fight through early on, the number of goals seem to be, you know, climbing back up where there's more points available. And that doesn't take away anything from these guys' brilliance. Like, the only case really I can, you know, you end up arguing in Edmonton is about the most valuable player stuff is Draisaitl had 120 points last year.
Yeah.
Like, man, like, their candidacy for MVP and stuff works against each other.
Yeah, it's almost like they cannibalize each other in a way.
That's where I was sorry, Brian, but that's where I was saying, like, I left Draisaitl and Marner off my list, but I believe easily both of those guys could be on my list had they not been playing with the other guy, mm-hmm. you know, relative terms.
I think you'd say that about Bergeron and Marchand, too, have both been off to just great starts.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, again.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's like we almost take them for granted. Like Bergeron in particular, the numbers are – he's got more than a point a game.
Yeah.
What else he's going to bring.
Yeah, that's where I was going to factor in is how do you judge this, though, Ray? We talked about it earlier. When there's such a disparity in games played, you know, and
– Well, also, like, Noodles, like, you're playing the same six teams all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
this voting this year has a chance to be so far all over the board. Like, I've seen Jonathan Huberdeau play, I think, three times. I've seen him on the highlights lots. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
I've seen him three times. Like, normally in a regular year, you see him a lot more. How are you going to vote for people as the most valuable player when they play in a division that you never see? It's going to be. I think there's going to be some funny votes this year.
Well, hey, how many games do you think they're going to get to? We were just talking about it.
I think they're going to get to 48. Oh, like yeah. I think 48 is going to be the number that. That some teams are going to be able to get to. And I think we might end up with a place like baseball where, you know, you get near the end of the year and, hey, Nashville has got 11 games left and only three of them are against teams that are fighting for a playoff spot. The other eight are going to go out the window. They do it in baseball.
Yeah.
They do it all the time. They're like, there's a team with 157 games this year.
Yeah. I don't know if you – I said this earlier too, Ray. I don't know if you need it balanced. Like, if Canada can play 56, go for it. If everyone else is playing 48, so be it. Like, what – I don't see that being that big of a disadvantage. If you have to play eight more games come the conference final, I don't think that schedule, that workload is going to lead to a big disadvantage when you play a team in the conference final.
See, I don't think it does, and I also think they're not going to have a choice.
No. They're not giving that money back.
If they keep knocking games off the schedule for these teams, eventually, short of them playing five games in 4 days, which of course can't happen, how are they going to make them up? They've only got so much time.
Yeah. No, it's going to be so imbalanced. And that's where, you know, and I hate doing this. I hate going, okay, that guy is on pace for, and we've had to do it anyways. You know, Matthews' 50 goals technically is 34, correct? Isn't that a 50-goal season would be 34 for him, right? So, like, what if a guy only plays 48 and he's up against another guy who got 56 games and you're going, okay, well, hold on here. This guy got this goals or this guy got this amount of points. And you know what I mean? Like,
that's why
now
I think it's
screwy.
The ones that you can win on your own, although I guess they will be in balance to an extent. Like, if Matthews plays 56 and wins the Rocket,
right.
But someone plays 48 and is close in terms of goals per game, will there be an asterisk? I guess there might be.
Well,
but if you play
right,
equal
be.
Amount, then I think it means even more. If you get the Art Ross or the Rocket, it's like you can't take that away from anyone. Like, it's the NHL. You played NHL teams. That guy scored the most points. That guy scored the most goals. But if it's if there's an imbalance in the amount of games, then it might come down to points per game and all that. And then who wants to who wants that conversation?
Oh, it's man, I should have paid more attention to math in high school.
Oh, it's so annoying. Imagine you're like, no, this guy won the Art Ross based on points per game.
Well, but you know the other guy's home city fans are going to go, yeah, but, you know, my guy had, you know, 1.03 points per game. Your guy only had 1.01.
Right.
It's going to be obnoxious.
Well, and on top of it, the narrative angle, I think, gets exposed even more. Like, Noodles, you brought up Joe Pavelski, who's been off to a great start. Let's say it continues at a certain rate. I mean, it's not he's not going to do what he's been doing, but I could see voters saying, okay, he had a great year, and he dealt with COVID and an ice storm that shut down the season, and, wow, I got to give him even more credit. Or is that fair to the other players who are like, what do you want me to do? We didn't get shut down.
Right.
And, you know, our water wasn't shut down, or we didn't have an ice storm or whatever.
Right, right.
You know,
it just,
but
it's weird.
These
like,
are
that's
all
the thing.
Different
it's
variables
so screwy.
That could factor in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all subjective. The voters, we know that story. I mean, you're going to vote for whoever you see fit. Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, enjoy it tonight, buddy. We'll break it down tomorrow at 5.
Yep, you betcha. Hutchison is tonight, right?
Yes, he is. Yeah,
I did
and Hyman's
see that note
out.
From Mark.
Yep, Hutchinson's in. Hyman's out. Bogosian's out tonight, too, which I think Bogosian, it's not based on injury. It's just giving him a night off. And Hyman, it is injury-related, so we'll see come Saturday night in Montreal.
Well, I know that, you know, the Habs, I was just on a Montreal radio. They've been sitting around practicing for a week, so you know what that first 10 minutes might look like for Montreal. So.
Absolutely. Take
you know,
advantage.
You got a chance to jump on him there.
Big time. Well, we'll tee it up tomorrow at 5.
Yep, have a good one, guys. See you.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. If you're looking to lower your car payments, downsize your vehicle, or trade in two cars for one, visit MapleToyota.com or book an in-person appointment. Dallas Braden coming up on the Fernando Tatis Jr. monster contract, 14 years, $340 million. He hasn't even played a full 162 in the bigs. Has not played 162
crazy.
Games.
It's crazy.
And there are like two guys in history who are making more money than him on a contract. Mike Trout, Mookie Betts. Bryce Harper got blown past like a year and a half later by a guy who's barely been in the league.
It's crazy.
So we'll get into that and more. Pierre LeBrun still to come. The Raptors in Milwaukee tonight. Try to get you an update on Kyle Lowry and his standing. The Genesis Invitational is off and running. I saw something today that speaks to the greatness of Dustin Johnson. We'll touch on that. And Carson Wentz, your boy, is in Indianapolis. He's out of Philly. We'll touch on that deal as well.
Why did the coach have to go then?
Well,
like, what, why
exactly.
are they both gone?
Exactly. Like, if you're in Philly, you're like, really? Why not keep the guy who won a Super Bowl 3 years ago for you?
God, that's.
But Peterson's got to go, and Wentz is basically dumped out, too. And they got dead cap hits. You know, they got decent return, I guess. But we'll touch on it. We'll get into it and what it means for the Eagles, the Colts, and Carson Wentz and his reputation moving forward. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Hazy, you were mentioning Dustin Johnson, and I think you were talking about his greatness. I'll tell you, the Genesis or the L.A. Open, the Northern Trust, whatever you want to call it, that golf course, Riviera, looks so money every year. It's just I look at that golf course and I say, that's probably so hard. I mean, the first hole is the easiest hole on tour, basically. It's a short par 5. Then after that, get ready for some nasty. Like, it's a hard golf, but it looks amazing.
It's
like, I just want to go there and play the 10th hole once, that short little par 4.
Yeah.
It looks so sick.
It's so sick. It's a private course, I believe, right?
Of course.
I mean, we're talking big shooters. I think Larry David is a member there.
Really?
And yeah, I believe so. What's crazy about it, and you would have seen this, so there's no leaves on the trees. And yet, it's still in, like, perfect shape. Like, there's not a blade of grass out of place. Everything is beautiful. Everything
well, I don't
is
kid yourself.
End.
I think sometimes on tour, any kind of brown grass or any kind of imperfection is, like, spray-painted before the tour shows up. Like, anything is getting on TV. I think the U.S. Women's Open down in Texas where all the grass – I think there was – like, they make that place – and that's the thing. That place is so dialed in for when the guys show up there. But if you show up there and played in the middle of the summertime, you probably wouldn't be taken back all that much.
It'd still be a great course, but it wouldn't look the same.
Of course. It's so dialed in for these guys The fairways are rock hard. When you hit your drive, it rolls for 50 yards. That's why these guys' numbers are off the charts. It's not like they fly it all 330 in the air. It's just so dialed in when they show up. It's that's
I think
why
the
so
only
good,
course
man.
That would be consistent like that is Augusta. I think because they shut it down for like 4 or 5 months a year. I would assume, you know, like heavy hitter clientele, they show up at any point in October, and it's probably beautiful, and it's just in perfect shape. Beyond that, it's just impossible to pump that kind of money into maintenance.
No like, kidding.
Really
I played Pinehurst number 2 and Pebble Beach, 500 around, and the greens were garbage. They hadn't been cut in days, and it's like, this is my experience? Like, what the hell's going on here?
Right.
And it's just like, the one guy at Pinehurst was like, well, you got to play Pinehurst. I was like, yeah, I did, but the greens were terrible, and I had to pay $500. So I don't care about the name.
At Pinehurst Pebbles, number 2, really?
Yeah. Pinehurst number 2 was 400, Pebbles 500, and I paid for my buddy that I played with. So that's 1,000. We had to play with two people we didn't know that hit it 10 feet. And I told you, there was a guy slashing a guitar down in the water the whole day, and all I could hear was wedding rock music. He was the wedding singer. And I just looked at my buddy and I said, I can't believe I'm hearing this my first time at Pebble. 6 hours out on that golf course, it was the best slash worst experience of my golfing life.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, Pebble, I get Pinehurst number 2 is like obviously a world renowned course. I didn't realize it was to that extent because you could play public courses. We were talking about Torrey Pines a few weeks ago, which Torrey Pines is right there on the list with all these courses.
Of course, you can get on there. People say it's relatively easy to get on there.
Easy.
I'm not buying that, but.
That's what I was told. I had a couple of people send me notes saying, no, you can get on. It's like $125 to play it or whatever. You know, like that's – you pay that to play a local track around Toronto. You're playing Torrey Pines for $125 American. But, yeah, I was watching a little bit of the Genesis today. And Dustin Johnson, he's grinding on the front, like kind of slashing it around a little bit.
It wasn't going swimmingly for him.
Wasn't going so well. No. And I think it was on 7, I believe. He hit – like a 7-foot winding putt, and it was a tough putt, and he read it properly, and he hit it, yeah. And it was for par, to stay at even par.
I saw the putt. Right after that, Dottie Pepper said that's why he's number 1 in the world.
Exactly, and it was also because of the fist pump that he gave, and the telecast brought that up. They're like, this is a guy who all he does is win. All he does is win. He's number 1 in the world. It's the front nine on Thursday at the Genesis, and this guy's fist pumping to putt out a par to stay even par. And it speaks to the attitude. It speaks to what he realizes he can do right now. And then I look at the leaderboard because I turned it off for a couple hours. I'm like, oh, he shot 3 under. He's going to win the tournament.
Yeah. Like what does that put him? 1 back?
Yeah, 2 back now. Fitzpatrick's at 5 under. But he is going to win the tournament. Like, he's grinding on the front nine on Thursday, and now he'll be in cruise control. And I don't see how he's going to lose. Like,
dude,
that's how
good he
is.
If you want to pull something up, that's impressive. Pull up his last 15 starts. It's Tiger Woods-like, man.
It is.
It's 1-1, 2-6, 1-5th, 1-1-2. It's like the guy who goes over to Saudi wins.
Wins.
It's Tiger Woods-like.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy how good he is. And, yeah, I think his last 10 starts, international starts, I think the worst outing for him is like 12th or something. And outside of that, it's all top 10s, it's top 5s, top 3s, 4 wins. Like, it's just outrageous. It is.
Well,
it's Tiger Woods.
When you hit a 340-yard cut dead straight every time, it's like you're putting scoring clubs in your hand so much. And he's got his putter and his wedge game dialed in where it's like, it's impossible. If the putter's hot for him, it's impossible for him not
can't
to shoot
him.
300 or 400. Yeah, you can't beat him.
Can't beat him because he's just going to – that's the worst round he'll likely play. Like, unless he shocks the world and for whatever reason just has an off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'll bet you he goes 300 or 400 tomorrow and then 300 on Saturday. It's like, oh, here we go. At a course like that, he's just going to keep plugging away. Plugging away. He's so good. Carson Wentz is out. And this is a case study of how the media gets used to try to gain leverage, right? Because how often have we heard over the last month they want 2 first-round picks? Tons of teams are in on him, and all of a sudden he gets flipped for a third rounder and a second rounder that has conditions on it. It could become a first round pick if he plays 75% of the snaps next year or 70% of the snaps and they make the playoffs. So
my
they
favorite
could get
tweet
a first.
Was from somebody from Philly that said, weren't we supposed to get like 8 first-round picks for Wentz?
Exactly, which was clearly always ridiculous and bogus, but clearly from the Eagles saying, right. Hey, can you float this out that this is what we were getting? Like offers are on the table for 2 first-round picks. And I credit Indianapolis where they're like, okay, we want him because it's a reclamation project, but he has talent. Right. But we're not buying this 2 first-round pick garbage. Like, this is what we can give you. Take
you're only
it or
getting
it.
What somebody's going to give you, too.
So exactly.
But there's something in that guy where I remember what I was watching. It was so good. It was one of the best top 4 or 5 quarterbacks in the NFL. I just think that he can turn it around somehow. And I know he continued to go out there and play like garbage for Philly, and you're just like, what is this guy? Is it the injuries? Why is he turning the ball over? Why is he was awful. But and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, this guy is the next stud. It's just
I don't know how he'll be remembered in Philly. I don't think he'll be thought of highly.
No kidding. He's going to be remembered as the stud quarterback that didn't play in the Super Bowl, and Nick Foles was the guy that got the job done for them.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, he's not a legend there.
No, he's not.
No,
he's not.
Weird.
And that's got to hurt. Like, he went second overall. They moved up to get him. Second overall, he got the contract. But Nick Foles is way more popular. Way more popular.
Better nickname and better legacy.
Way better nickname. The best nickname possible. But also way better legacy and way more popular. And not only does Carson Wentz basically get dumped out of, you know, for pennies on the dollar, he leaves behind him a $33.8 million dead cap hit, which is the largest in NFL history. So you can't even fill out your roster this year.
That's a drag bunt. That's more than a drag bunt.
Oh, dude.
That's a cup and throw right in somebody's eye hole. Like, right at the appetizer and just suffocate them right down to the steak.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
insane.
$33.8 dead cap charge.
Can you imagine? Imagine being the GM thinking, our team sucks.
And we're screwed.
$33.8 million of the cap we can't even look at.
It's
can't
ridiculous.
Use. Carson Wentz. And if he redeems himself and plays well, that stings even more, you know? And I wonder, because you mentioned this, so what Doug Peterson is thinking, who the reports indicate lost his job because he turned on Carson Wentz. But then Wentz
one
is out
one or the other.
Well, yeah. Clearly it's both.
That's insane. Like,
yeah,
Doug Peterson. And you mentioned Foles. You talk about a guy, and who knows what's going to go on with Foles' career, Hayes, but you talk about a guy, it's much like any one of these Leafs, but they make so much money, it doesn't really matter what they're about their future or what they're going to do. Foles could go back to Philly as soon as somebody decides that he's done, and you talk about, like, luncheon speeches, golf tournaments, like a legend in that city. He will make more than $1 million a year doing that in Philly.
Yep.
He's the guy that won them the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's a football town. They've never won the Super Bowl before, and he's the guy that did it.
Yes.
And they don't blame him for deteriorating because they shipped him out, right? They kept Wentz. So even though, like, Nick Foles is nowhere to be found, went to Jacksonville, bust, Chicago, bust. He can't play. He's done. But in Philly, it doesn't matter. They
he might be back in Philly sooner than we think.
He could be. Yeah, he really could be. Dallas Braden coming up on the Fernando Tatis Jr. contract last night. We'll get back into it. Historic in nature. You talk about contracts. I think it's the biggest gamble in sports history. I can't think of anything else that comes close in terms of the scope of it all. 14 years, $340 million for a guy who has not even played 162 games in the bigs. It's crazy. He's so great. Big personality. Everything you want in a poster boy. But what is he in 3 years, let alone in 14? I'm not sure there's enough data on that. So Dallas will join us, Pierre LeBrunner, Hockey Insider, back into the Leaf game tonight, back into the Raptors game as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. So Joe Buck decided to knock the rust off his Twitter account today. I'm sure you guys saw the thread.
Yep.
And he wanted to address the comments he made. I guess he was doing a podcast, I think, with Cowherd, and we talked about it yesterday, and he said, you know, back in the day, he and Aikman, they'd have a little drink maybe before the game just to loosen up and realize, okay, have some fun in sports. Let's go out and do the job. And that spread like wildfire because people are like, wow, that's Joe Buck on Fox, like tens of millions of people watching. And
what
he and Aikman are boozing. And now he jumps on Twitter and he's like, wait a minute, clickbait, journalism in 2021. And he went out of his way to say, wish I didn't include Troy Aikman.
I told you, man, because you Aikman called him and said, like,
yeah, that's a call.
My question to him, and Hayes, you would have asked the same question, is I wish I didn't include Aikman. He didn't do it. Okay, well, how did you come up with the fancy drink name of the tequila splash of ginger ale? That wasn't you that was having that, so who the hell had it? Because he said right. Smoltz wanted a cold beer, and then Aikman had a kind of different taste. He would go for a tequila with ginger ale, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, well, who liked the tequila then? Yeah. You?
I think we know the answer to that, and I think it's a backpedal. And you go on
dude,
the attack.
I told you, Aikman was pissed. I bet you he was pissed, and he called him and said, dude, straighten this out because I can't stand this garbage right now. Wow. It was a ridiculously reckless thing to do from my point of view. Well, I thought it was ridiculous.
But you know what? Like, you think Fox is pissed? Like, he even said, like, Fox didn't reach out. I guarantee you maybe his PR people did or something and said, hey, you might want to deal with this nonsense online that, you know, you said on a podcast. You got to be mindful of it. So he's Joe Buck. He's not going to get fired over that. Like, Joe Buck is
no
a,
way.
You know, it there are things that I believe are fireable offenses. And you know, if he's actively drunk on air and stuff like that, if he's Namath on the sidelines acting up and that, you can understand. I think he was being a little bit of a hero, telling a funny story, and he overstepped his boundaries because you should never include a coworker when you're telling a story because Aikman's going, what are you doing? Why are you dragging me
right,
into
why
this?
Am I included in why, this? I didn't give
exactly.
you a pass to bring it up.
Right. And I don't think it's that big of a deal, but
no.
He obviously felt it was a big enough deal to go on to Twitter to say it's not a big deal.
I think it says something about where we are as a society, where we're so stiff and so politically correct, although this has nothing to do with politics. But
right.
Back in the day, we had Devlin on yesterday. He's like, I used to hang out with Joe Buck's dad, Jack Buck, who's one of the great play-by-play guys of all time. Pack of cigarettes, beers, you know, Harry Carey smashing Bud Light during a game. Like,
dude,
that kind of stuff.
You know what it's like, Brian. No one cares about that era, though. It's like, don't even think about pulling that stuff off.
But who made that decision for society is what I'm asking. Like, go ahead. What do I care if you have a beer or two and, you know, why is it immediately like, oh, that could be cancel culture worthy? He admitted to doing something that had no effect on anybody's life.
Because
nobody's
everyone, you just mentioned the exact word. People are super fired up to just have something on you to cancel.
Right.
They just can't wait.
But they
just want the cancel culture. You do one little thing, it's not, y'all, you get another shot or kind of be better, you're done. You're gone. You're off the universe.
Yeah, but
people
one
are super horny for that.
What's funny about that, though, is I love watching old videos. You watch Johnny Carson interviewing somebody.
Oh, my God. It's
he's
so
got
offside.
A scotch.
It's not even
he's
funny.
Got, but he's got a scotch sitting on his desk, and he's hacking a dart. Like, that was. And I know life has changed, and what's acceptable has changed, and all of that. But I don't think that was the worst thing in the world. I think the way people conduct their lives and what comes out of their mouths and that type of attitudes have changed and evolved, and they should have. Mm-hmm. But if Johnny Carson, like if the three of us wanted to, on a show, have a beer, we wouldn't because we're professionals. But, you know, ultimately, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
It wouldn't affect anybody's life. And maybe it's a lesson, you know what, it's not everything needs to be told because
exactly.
You can't control what the reaction is going to be. And maybe that is what Joe Buck is regretting at this point. Not necessarily that it's a truthful story and Aikman and all, when all is said and done, they're still going to get in the booth and do their thing. And no one's going to care when they're calling a great ball game next fall. You know, Joe Buck's going to start calling baseball games on Saturday afternoons. He's going to be calling the World Series. He's still going to do a remarkable job.
That's
who
the
he
point.
Is.
That's the point. He does a great job. We've had people on this show that go, you know what, I got 8 points in a game, and I had a rough night the night before. Did the fans care?
Nope. Eight
fans
points in a
care.
Win. It's all good. It's all good.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
And did you see the – I want to play this audio in the next hour where there was a reporter down in Philly who was doing the Zoom call with Doc Rivers last night. And I don't know how Doc Rivers called this. I don't know if it was an ongoing joke or if somehow he could see the reporter. But he asked him and called him out. He's like, are you laying in bed right now while you're asking me a question? And the guy said, yes. He admitted to laying in bed. And we'll get to it.
Oh, my God, dude. You cannot say yes.
Ever. Ever. Like, unless he can see you lying in bed, you have to be like, no, I'm not. Yes. I'm standing. I'm at my desk. You cannot admit that you're laying in bed talking
Are
to the coach.
Are you in your underpants right now? Yes.
It's
you
an
can't
outrageous
do it.
Amount of candor. I'll give him credit for being honest, I guess, but I think he just buckled. So we'll play that. We'll get into it in the next hour as well. Dallas Braden, Pierre LeBrun coming up. Leafs and Raptors in action tonight. We're tracking if Lowry will play. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FISRA for license 12616.
This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.